Hello, welcome to ATM, Artists Talk Movies, a podcast interviewing creatives about films that have inspired and or influenced their personal studio work. I'm Hyde Fontenot, and I'm here with co-host Aaron Stafford.
We're here to talk about contemporary art and the creative impulse with new guests each episode. We're having casual conversations.
We don't pretend to be authorities.
We're hoping to give you a window into the visionary process of makers.
There it is.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
The most phenomenal discovery of our time.
How'd you do this?
Becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
Hi, Natasha. I miss you.
Aaron, I miss you. I was just gonna say, we don't talk enough, just us. I feel like we talk during the podcast.
Yeah, and like a few minutes afterwards, and then yeah. I'm a grandma, so I usually have to go to bed.
Yeah.
Fairly soon.
You are a grandma.
Yes, I am. I'm not ashamed. I'm a grandma. I'm embracing it.
Well, it's funny because I feel like our relationship is very public because everything we've talked about over the last year has been recorded.
This is true.
And I'm a giant shit talker, so I need some private phone calls with
you. I know. We have to get in our gossip.
What are we watching this week?
We're talking about Jurassic Park 1993. It has been my dream. This is why I started the podcast, so that I could talk about this movie. It's a movie that I read about in a book by Sadie Doyle. She's this amazing writer. And she wrote this book called Dead Blondes and Bad Mothers. I think that's what it's called. And it's all about like women that get depicted in movies and they're portrayed as these monsters, these like, villains. And relating that back to like the patriarchy. So interesting. And so she has a chapter devoted to Jurassic Park. And it was just like... It was so, and I was like, wow, I had never thought about that movie like that before.
Okay, now I want to read this.
I know. In fact, I lent my book out to a friend, and I need to get that back because I'm always lending. I'm like a library.
So Sadie Doyle?
Sadie Doyle. And then she also wrote a couple other books, but that was the first one that she was on NPR. So she did a piece on Think about it. And I was like... Who the fuck is this Sadie Doyle person? She's amazing. So I've been dying to get into this this sort of like gender theory about Jurassic Park. But obviously we have Sarah, who is our guest.
Yeah, let me introduce our guest this week. Is Houston-based artist Sarah Welsh. She is a lifelong draftsperson, a wayward comics maker, and a lover of craft with a particular interest in the intersections and miscommunications between nature and the built environment. So her pick makes a lot of sense. Sarah was awarded the DMA Arch and Ann Giles Kimbrough Fund grant. She is an alum of Skowhegan and the McDowell residency programs, as well as the infinitely prestigious and now defunct UT Dallas residency program known as Central Track, where I was the director.
I remember that. Oh my goodness.
She has a very long painting of ocelots at the George Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston, Texas. A painting that she actually completed at the McDowell residency when she was there in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah describes herself as a Gulf Coast druid, a fire sign, an earth dragon, a gardener, and a natural burial advocate.
Oh yeah.
This keeps coming up in our podcast.
It does.
I personally am the proud owner of her Risograph zine anthology entitled Total Monsoon. And you, listeners, can find her swampy art editions and zines online at mysticmultiples.com and also her Etsy store by the same name. Welcome, Sarah Welsh.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm good. Sarah. You're still there. I was like, oh, Sarah fell asleep.
You didn't leave yet. Okay.
No, I was just trying not to laugh.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And we'll put a link to those in the description.
Her online stores, yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to, because I sort of got caught up in the whole Sadie Doyle stuff, I wanted to just quickly give a little bit of information about the movie for those like Hyde who hadn't seen Jurassic Park, or maybe kind of, how could you forget? But just a little bit here, was directed by Steven Spielberg in 1993. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's based off of a Michael Crichton book of the same title. And yeah. It stars Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum. Oh, I love him.
Richard. Ladies love Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my gosh, he is so sexy. Sir Richard Attenborough. Ooh, la,
yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson. We cannot forget him.
I know.
And Wayne Knight from Seinfeld. Classic.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Sarah, can you talk about your history with this movie? Like, when did you first see it? Like, how are you influenced by it? Maybe give us a little bit of information there.
Sure. When I was a kid, we...
In 1993.
Yeah, in 1993, when I was very small. We didn't have cable, but we did have a small collection of VHS tapes, and Jurassic Park just happened to be one of them. So
yeah.
When I had to make this call about which movie to pick, it was going to have to be Jurassic Park, or it was going to have to be Fern Gully, because those two are probably the VHS tapes I have watched the most in my life.
Oh my God, Batty, I was watching that the other day, the rap song from Fern Gully. Don't ask me why, but it makes me so happy. Anyway.
Yeah,
so...
you Gen X's are losing me.
So Sarah, so this has been a movie that you saw when you were a kid. That's how I think I saw it in the theater, so very fancy.
It was scary.
Yeah, what?
I can't imagine being a little kid and watching this.
I know, but I thought it was amazing. Like, I didn't want to be a paleontologist, but I wanted to be an archaeologist, whatever I thought that meant.
Uh-huh.
And I think movies like this really kind of shaped that, like, interest in STEM and, like, archaeology and all of that. So, like, our history with the world.
Yeah. Did you go through an archaeology phase, Sarah?
No, and I can't really claim to have any interest in dinosaurs either. It's just...
You just made children cry.
Yeah. But this movie still does... That still does a lot for me.
Oh, yeah, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was still kind of... I mean, I hadn't seen this movie in decades, so... Now, I knew what was coming, but I'd forgotten how scary it was.
Yeah.
And how convincing it is. And, you know, we can get kind of into some of the special effects and things like that, but I feel like it, like, holds up pretty well,
uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh.
Like, Hyde, we need your opinion because you had never seen it. So, like, is it as good as, like, we think it is?
It did hold up well, I think. Okay. It didn't feel terribly dated. And the special effects were amazing.
Uh-huh.
It was so much better than CGI. Like, CGI really, like, bores me.
Yes, I totally agree. In fact, I think that a lot of people say that the later iterations or the sequels, even though they have all this advanced technology, are not as convincing, which I think is, like, so interesting that Steven Spielberg was able to... work with a limited capacity and still make something so, like, impactful, you know?
Yeah, that's Steven Spielberg. What an underdog.
I know. Oh, my God, right? And this, so Jurassic Park, from what I understand, was a pretty big blockbuster hit. And I think the only, the movie that trumped it was Titanic, which is a whole other disaster movie. But, yeah, so it held up in the box office up until that point. So Titanic was, like, 1998 or something.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, so before we get too far along in this, yeah. Sarah, I want to talk to you about your, I'm getting a damned spam call.
Oh, no.
I always wonder why that doesn't happen more when we're on the podcast.
I know. It's like, why don't we sneeze more on the podcast?
I know.
I never know.
So, Sarah, about your... studio work in particular, and I want our audience to understand what kind of subject matters you're embracing and mm-hmm. why this film is important to you, because if they're unfamiliar with your work. So you live in Houston, and Houston is often a victim of natural disaster.
Yes.
You've had your studio, you've had your studio destroyed by hurricanes.
My gosh.
Yes, yeah.
No way.
Yeah, during Harvey, we were unlucky enough to have our home slash studio flooded.
Oh my God.
But we were lucky enough to have a loft in there, so we had a place to go when the water started filling the place.
Wow. Yeah. That's terrifying.
Yeah. Jeez. So you're up in the loft and your house is full of water.
Wow. Yes, it was a really weird 48 hours, and it was weird to sleep inside a building where the bottom is full of water, let me tell you.
Yeah, like a swimming pool. Yeah.
I remember these are the days of Facebook, when I was on Facebook. And I remember a recent guest, Anthony Sonnenberg, was posting during this storm.
That's right. He was in Houston.
He was. And he was saying that the sound of rain was making him feel sick to his stomach or something like that. And I was like... For a Texan to say that is like, I've never heard anybody.
Well, for our international listeners, Texas is really huge, mm-hmm. and we have a variety of ecosystems. So, you know, Houston is really swampy, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. West Texas gets, you know, like 3 inches of rain a year or something like that.
Right, yeah.
Like, it never snows in Houston, and it snows all the time in the Panhandle.
Yeah, it's pretty diverse.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, I just realized this, and I know, like, Sarah, you've got, you know, these sort of, like, ecological narratives happening in your work, and, you know, obviously, like, the themes of Jurassic Park, it's not like a literal, like it's more, I think, metaphorical, the relationship perhaps, but like you're in Houston and Houston's known for oil, and oil comes from, I think it's dinosaurs, isn't it?
Like, fossil fuels.
Yeah, right? I don't know. Anyway, pure coincidence probably, but... Yeah, so
I have to tell you guys something about I can't name the institution, but I have a friend that works in a science museum.
Okay.
And as with a lot of things that are sort of compromised by commerce and capitalism, is that the science museum is heavily funded by the petroleum industry. Oh. So they were doing an exhibit of so they're doing this new display of flora and fauna from, you know, like 30 million years ago, 400 million years ago, like a billion years ago. And it's things we've only ever seen in fossil form.
Yeah.
And one of their sponsors, who was a petroleum company, was also, they happen to be Christians. And they they wanted to insert, you know, they were like, well, is there any way you could leave the date off of these? Because they conflict with what our biblical teachings are. Oh, because, you know, there are some Christian sects that only believe, the earth is like, I don't know, 1,000 years old.
6,000.
And they were like, well, this is a science museum. And so, like, we can't do the display unless we're putting accurate date on these things. And, you know, so the science did win out, but it was a real touch and go moment. So yes, fossil fuels are derived from like deceased plants and animals.
Sarah, can you give our listeners a brief summary of Jurassic Park for those crazies who've not seen it?
I would
or love those to. Who want a refresher.
Yeah. Okay. So, Jurassic Park is about, I guess you would call, Richard Attenborough's, I think David Hammond is his character's name.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I suppose he's like a wealthy entrepreneur and decides he wants to start a dinosaur theme park. And he buys an island, a fictional island off the coast of Costa Rica. And then he's having trouble getting funding. So he hires two archaeologists and a mathematician and his lawyer and asks them to come out to see all the work they've done. He also invites his grandchildren so they can spend a weekend. Hijinks ensue.
Like you do. Yeah. Why not? Why not add a couple kids in
the mix? I love hijinks ensue. It's like, where have you been? It's 3 a.m. You know, hijinks.
And it kind of goes wrong, doesn't it? for these folks.
Yeah, so they've recreated, or they've genetically engineered dinosaurs from blood from a mosquito withdrew from a dinosaur, and it's preserved in amber.
Yeah.
We should have had a scientist on to say, like, is that bull?
You know what? I think that only recently have we been able to find bone marrow in the bones that we could potentially, but you can't do it with, like, a little teeny tiny bit of blood. Like, that's not how science works, I think. But there's a lot that this movie got wrong with regards to, like, the way that the dinosaurs, the science and also the way that the dinosaurs are represented is also incorrect.
Hmm.
So anyway, so Sarah, tell us how the movie ends.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
So they try to have this blissful weekend. There's another plot at work with the Dennis character, a wronged IT worker who wants to see David Hammond's project go down in flames.
Don't fuck with IT.
You don't want to do it. Nuh-uh.
Is plotting against the park and manages to turn off all the dinosaur, like, electrical fencing and makes everyone extremely vulnerable. Most of the movie.
Well, it's also kind of, it's kind of automated. Like, so much in the park depends on electricity for automation.
So.
And security.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the movie is spent with them trying to evade killer dinosaurs. And then in the end, they just barely escape the island with their lives.
Yeah.
Some of them don't escape.
Yes.
Some of them
that's
die.
Really quickly.
I know.
There's a part 2 and part 3, and you guys have seen?
No. I...
Yeah. No. I saw...
Neither of you are committed to the
series.
I
haven't seen the whole franchise.
Why?
I think I've...
Why would you? It's such a... honestly, it's such a almost perfect movie. Like, do we... I hate it when Hollywood does this. I mean, there are times when it works, but...
Well, you can see it from a mile off. Because even within the film itself, you realize there's all this merchandising.
Oh, I know. They did. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and... I'm going to renounce all the other movies that come after this one.
Yeah. I'll say I did see... It's the one... It's, you know, obviously they've come out with several in the past, like, few years. The one that came out, the first one that was like, okay, this is like Jurassic World, like, it's like a whole new crew, whole new cast, all of that.
Yeah.
And I watched that, a bootleg copy on a little teeny tiny TV, and it was kind of grainy. Yeah, it was kind of grainy, and I was like, it feels like the original because the quality is so bad, but it's still a very bad movie, and it just... It sucks because, like, I find that Jurassic Park, it's, like, the pacing is so good. Yeah. There's nothing that, like, I don't feel like there's anything. There are moments when I was like, all right, maybe that wasn't necessary, but it's just few and far between. And it's, like, it's such a well-crafted movie. And so it's going to be disappointing when you see something so horrible.
One of the things I was going to say about the way that the... Some of the, like, really heightened disaster scenes in the film where, like, the Jeep is stuck in the tree and it's sliding down and it's, like, you know, just barely missing them. I'm looking at that from, like, how do you produce something, a scene like that? And you have to reset because you take multiple takes. And I'm like, how are they doing this? Mm. How are they, like... like destroying this tree again and again and again. And also how similar it is to the experience of going to like a Universal Studios or a Disney park. Yeah. And that's why I was thinking that it was really like, it was like that, what do they call it? Like integration, where you're like, you're not just making a movie. You're thinking about how's the park ride going to go? Because we're definitely doing a park ride.
Yeah.
What do the t-shirts look like? What's the Burger King tie-in? You know, it's all... It's lots of money-making opportunities in here. I'm sure that's how they funded the film, too.
I have no idea, but I wouldn't be surprised. Although, as a youngster, when I first saw this, totally went over my head. I was just like, I'm in it. I'm fully immersed.
It's engrossing,
I mean, none of that, like... And even, you know, when I watched it last week, I was like... I'm still high and heavy for Jeff Goldblum. I'm still scared by the dinosaurs, even though I'm not sure. So when you get older, you watch a movie like this and it changes. Sarah, what were there any things that like changed for you as like watching this as an adult?
Well, actually, I was going to mention something that that y'all were just saying about all the heavy branding. So when the archaeologists Grant and Elle get to the island to like review it or whatever, it's sort of amazing how much branding has already gone into everything, and the park hasn't even opened yet. And and my read on that was really like, you know, kind of a facet of Hammond as like a big time capitalist, and that was like part of like his character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his lawyer / consultant is saying, we can charge people $10,000 to come here. You know.
Oh, and then they were going to have a coupon day. I'm like, oh, fucking bad. All right.
It was not equitable or accessible.
Yeah. So,
except through the coupon.
It's funny to think about how the movie might function in its like life as a movie, but also... how they're sort of commenting on that stuff within the film.
It's a bit meta, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, all right, you're making it obvious that there's merchandising and there's this, you know, gold mine, you know. I mean, and obviously, like, it's stuck. Like, I mean, I think Jurassic Park is one of those movies that it is in, at least in as somebody who is a young person when it came out, like, I'll never forget this movie. It made such an impact.
So I wanted to suggest a Marxist edit on this is okay. that you delay the disaster until you get the island packed with the richest people on Earth.
Wow.
And then...
we're going to get Jeff Bezos over there. We're
yeah,
get...
right? Like, Zuckerberg, so sorry. You're on...
must get out of here. Go visit some dinosaurs.
Your dinosaur food.
Maybe this is actually what's happening, what they're planning to do on Mars. Maybe this is actually... Hi, did you figure it out? Are you... is that there?
I have not. I have not figured out anything. In my life or beyond. Yeah.
So that, okay, so Sarah, that's something that I felt too, like I kind of saw this in a completely different perspective because, you know, I saw the folly of Hammond and his almost like assertive colonial manifest destiny ickiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That came with his character. And then I was yeah. also like, okay, so... you're trying to basically establish the safety of the park because somebody had died and now you need to convince the investors that the park is safe, right? Like that's, right. I had forgotten that whole plot. Like, so it was almost like watching it for the first time with, I was like, what are they talking about? And then, so in order to convince the lawyer, who then's supposed to convince the investors, they bring in like a paleontologist and a botanist, or I'm not sure what uh-huh. Ellie. Oh, it's like and yeah. a mathematician. I'm like, how do they know about park safety? Like, what's their what? I don't. Uh-huh. I just didn't understand like the logic. I mean,
yeah,
honestly,
was he was there for logistics or something?
It like, was so, and I'm yeah. like. Obviously, Jeff Goldblum is amazing.
He was there to look sexy.
Yes. And I loved that, yeah, I mean, he was...
to hit on the only woman in the film.
The only adult woman in the... this movie, unfortunately, does not pass the Bechdel test because it only had one adult female.
Oh, but all the dinosaurs were female.
Oh, that's true, but they didn't talk. They didn't have names, Hyde. What were their names?
Big Meanie, Little Meanie, Medium Meanie.
Okay, so... Meanie that spews out, like, poisonous venom.
Right. Oh, yeah. They were terrifying. Okay, so I kind of want to talk about one of my pet peeves in
yes. okay.
nature films and such. Yeah. So I grew up on a farm... and we were around a lot of animals, and, you know, you have a certain, like, something called animal husbandry, when you know how to, like, it's yeah. like horsemanship, you know how yes. to be around animals. Okay. And this is something that drove me crazy with the crocodile hunter, the I forget his real name, Steve Irwin, uh-huh. who was killed by the stingray, mm. is that he was always tempting fate, and sort of like getting up in animals' faces. And I feel like for these characters, when they encounter the animal, maybe it's a stegosaurus that's
yeah.
down, and they immediately come up to it, and they're putting their face on this animal's face. And I'm like, okay, not only is this an animal you've never encountered, you have no idea what your biology or their biology is,
yeah.
but that you're, like, you're also putting yourself in harm's way. If it, like... had one false move, you'd lose your life, you know?
Yeah, if it, like, put its leg up and put it down on your foot, like, that's it.
Your
foot's
so,
over, yeah,
so
sorry.
There's no recognition of, like, yeah. personal space or safety with in regards to these animals, like... and I know it's fictitious, but it was really, like... get the fuck away from that dinosaur. Like, no, you don't get to hand feed
and,
this thing that is
yeah.
30 stories tall.
And it's not yeah. feeling well. Like, I don't know about you all, but when I'm not feeling well, I'm not my best. Like, I'm not going
right,
to be, you
right.
know, like the nicest to everybody.
You have a
maybe.
Bunch of monkeys come into your hospital room like, and like crawl
here.
All over you. Shine lights in your face.
Digging through my poop? Stop it.
That's right. Yeah, that's my job, Erin. Sarah, do you have pets?
I don't right now, but I had a few growing up.
I know, like, cats figure in pretty largely into your work.
Oh.
And frogs.
Oh.
Alligators. I know you don't have a pet alligator.
Oh, no.
Well, I don't know.
But
somebody in Houston
could. My dad had a pet alligator.
Oh,
for real?
Yeah, for real. This is, like, a funny family lore thing. He used to talk about this all the time when we were kids. And I was just like, stop lying. Like, you didn't have an alligator. Like, whatever. And then when I got a little bit older, I asked him about it again. And he was like, yeah, that was a true story.
Oh, my God.
Because he grew up in Texas City. And he had a bunch of older brothers. And somehow they got their hands on a baby alligator and brought it to him for his birthday. And they raised it.
Wow.
Until it was, I think it was about, I mean, at its, like, longest, I think it was only, it was still pretty young. I think it was only, like, 4 feet from the snoot to tail.
Still, but, a 4 foot alligator, no.
They used to keep it in a baby pool in their living room.
No!
Yeah, and my dad said his mother used to, to shoo it outside during the day. And, like, she would totally, like, pick it up and handle this thing.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I hate to ask, but what happened to the alligator? Like, did it
go to... Shoes and a purse.
What happened was, you know, there was a rare cold snap down there.
Oh, and
I think the alligator happened to be outside and he got or she got hypothermia. Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
And her name was Gertrude.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah. Oh. Wow.
Have you ever depicted her in any of your work?
Yeah, I actually have an illustration of her in the baby pool in a living room. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which you can go to Etsy.
Oh my goodness.
Or mysticmultiples.com. And I mean, just have a look. Maybe you don't want to purchase it, but you could.
Maybe you do. So, Sarah, there seems to be a theme in your work of, like, nature and human made and this sort of, like, push and pull. Can you, like, I think that theme was, like, pretty obvious in the movie.
Yeah.
Is that, like, am I, like, you want to talk a little bit about that, whether it's in your work or in Jurassic Park?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in Jurassic Park, the thing that, I mean, I love it because it's, like, it's, I think it's always, like, I find a lot of humor in, like, seeing those, like, weird intersections between, like, man-built world and the environment and just, like, I don't know, I guess just how wrong people get it sometimes. And and the fact, and the fact that people have this serious illusion or delusion that they have some kind of control. Like, in the natural world is something, it's like, the more you think about it, the more you see it everywhere, even in, like, the smallest things.
Yeah.
Of course, it's super pronounced in this film. But, so, I think, yeah, a lot of my work is sort of about that illusion. And, and I guess about, like, entropy and, and, like, yeah, nature, I like the cyclical, death life cycle stuff. Super general, but, yeah.
Well, you live in a metropolitan area or a metropolis, Houston, but it's also, it's so close to nature because of these natural disasters.
Yeah, that's the funny thing is, like, Houston is really urban and they've tried their damnedest to, like, pave over everything here. But even then, like, the fact that we're so vulnerable to disasters and the fact that things get overgrown really fast here and, you know, it's still full of life fighting back and kind of fighting against, like, human endeavors.
Yeah.
And like, it's kind of, I mean, I'm trying to think, in Dallas here, I mean, we get tornadoes and
that's right,
totally unpredictable. You know, you just kind of hope and pray like that.
Yeah, tornadoes are even more unpredictable than hurricanes. Mm. Like hurricanes, sometimes you'll get a week's warning.
Yeah.
Mm.
Sometimes that's not enough, or like, where do you even go? Where do you put stuff? Yeah.
And there's a storm that happens in Jurassic Park, which I think is obviously quite poignant because it really kind of starts to feed into the idea that like it's uncontrollable. And it's interesting to me in the movie that like everybody on the in the resort or theme park or whatever is eventually like evacuated because the storm is so bad, and yet like the other folks, it's weird. I was like, why didn't they evacuate? That to me didn't make any sense.
I agree. They seem blissfully unaware that everyone else is getting out.
Oh, it's starting to rain. Oh no. You know, it's just like, guys, get the fuck out. Like, it's going to get, but the movie had to happen. So, you know, the storm though adds a lot. And then from what I understand on a technical perspective, special effects, so the first scene with the T-Rex, right? Like that with the water, you know.
When he eats the lawyer off the toilet.
Yeah. So that is an animatronic. And which to me, I was like, damn, like that's very convincing. Uh-huh. And obviously, I think a lot of it has to do with like the editing, like exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that, but also it helped that it was raining because it made the animatronic look more realistic.
It was like a glaze in a painting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, that's so clever that they decided to have, like, the rain adds a lot, but it's also making it look more real, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's like, ooh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So.
You can almost feel the discomfort too, like when your feet get wet, when your socks are wet, you know, they're slipping around in the mud, when you're just so soaked to the bone and you're trying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, a striking thing in the film for me is that these people are being hunted, and it's the reversal of what we're kind of accustomed to, like, using the world however we like, and having some false sense of control of the natural world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk about how this movie relates to our current political climate?
I was just realizing that I missed some stuff earlier I should have mentioned, which is I mean, especially about the illusion of control. Is like this this whole illusion that they're gonna control these, you know, supposedly female dinosaurs.
Yeah. Oops.
And this movie.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, it's amazing to watch this movie now, actually, because of course, like, I'd say conversations about gender and sexuality have opened up a lot, and. And the idea that gender is a extremely flexible thing is sort of, you know, to think about that when you're watching this movie can be really interesting.
And so for those that are listening this week, you might understand kind of where we're coming from. But like, for those that are listening, like, long past this date, we're in the throes of trying to keep Roe v. Wade in the in the U.S., And
also, like, here specifically in Texas, and I'm not sure if, like, and so the movie suggests that the dinosaurs can transition from female to male, or there's something going on there that allows them to reproduce out in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, there's a biological precedent for it.
Yeah.
It's one of the scientists.
That's right. Yeah. And here in Texas, we have a lovely governor who is trying to suggest that parents who are raising transgender children are like child abusers. It's wild. So like this movie, I feel like touches on a couple different like pretty poignant like political touchstones right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That It's like we still haven't learned our lesson, but like, fine. You know, like if we have to keep fighting for these rights to just be like, you know, natural in a way, like it doesn't, I don't know, but I feel, I feel like this is,
I don't even know what to say. I'm so frustrated, so like crestfallen, like when are they just going to get enough control of everyone else? You know, never.
Aaron, earlier when you were talking about how this movie does not pass the Bechdel test, it's so funny because while of course that's true, there's certain stuff about this movie, whether the director or Michael Crichton intended this, I have no clue, but there's things about the movie that you could have such a feminist read of that are really interesting. Like the fact... Here's two different takes on it. I've actually... I'm going to have to send you... I'm going to have to dig up the link and send it to you. But there... Somebody actually wrote a paper about this, that there could be a feminist interpretation of this film from the dinosaurs' perspectives. Because all the dinosaurs... are female, and ultimately they are, you know, they, by the end of the movie, they're sort of, they've taken the, I guess, the dominant role, you know, they've ran off the people there who were trying to control them and trying to enforce a certain way of life upon them. And
they're so... There's a really, my favorite scene, this, besides all the Jeff Goldblum moments, but there's a brilliant scene where T-Rex has actually saved the day at the sort of at the end when she has fought off the other velociraptors or whatever they're called. And as she's letting out this ginormous roar, the sign starts to fall down and it says something like when dinosaurs ruled the earth, and it's like this beautiful moment and it's like
it's true, it drifts down like a scrolled tattoo.
It's so poetic. I just love that. So it's just like I think that there was a time when women did have more autonomy and authority, or at least more equality, you know, and there's a lot like you can read into, keep going, sir, because I have so much, I want to say.
The other phenomenal thing about this movie is that unlike a lot of, I think it's almost more progressive than a lot of action films you see today. Which is really sort of unnerving. But it...
Because it has themes and, like, ideas behind the action.
But, for example, the Laura Dern character, Ellie. So, in the end of the film, it's Ellie who gets to... save the day ultimately, because Ellie is the one who is able to get to like the power station to turn back all the power on for the dinosaur paddocks.
And I was gonna say
after that, the granddaughter character Lex, who is a self-proclaimed hacker, which is amazing. This is like before its time, like women in STEM, STEM moment. But Lex is a hacker, and it's really up to her to figure out how to get all the phone lines and everything else working on the computers, like highly, you know, computer. I was about to say systemized. What is it? It's just like everything's programmed by computers on the island, so they need her to fix them after Samuel Jackson's character Arnold and Dennis are both incapacitated.
Well, and I love that Jeff Goldblum, God bless him, is damseled, and I was just like, oh my goodness.
Oh.
Yeah, completely.
Oh, but
and then he's like spread out on the table with his like chest all hanging out, and I'm just like, oh my god, he's so fucking sexy. Oh my god. Anyway, I have a mad crush, and I had a crush on him even as a youngster. But I also had a weird crush on the Alan Grant, only because he had just been in, The Piano, and he had like this super sexy nude scene. And I was just like, wow.
Anyway. Wait, did you watch The Piano when you were a kid?
I kind of did, because my parents loved that movie. And like,
you're unsupervised.
I know. And they would be like, go away. But like, we would stay. And yeah, I mean, although I have been traumatized now from full frontal Harvey Keitel, for sure. but anyway, so yeah, but so he gets damseled, which I love, and then the other two fellows also are murdered, and these are the two, like, a lot of the guys you feel like are like. Who's the one that's like kind of like the Australian outback kind of?
Yeah, the big game hunter.
Muldoon. Yeah, Muldoon, and he's got like the little short shorts, and you're like, he should be the one theoretically, you know, to sort of. But no, it's Ellie, and she's the one who, and you know, and Alan Grant at the end, he's taking care of the children. Like, he's taken on the caretaker role. And it's like all these like stereotypical reversals get switched.
Oh, right. He evolves as a nurturing person because he keeps saying, I don't like kids.
Right. Which I was like, I get it. They can be smelly, stinky, whatever. But at the end, he kind of becomes a nurturer. Whether or not that implies that he wants his own, because like having your own children is different from like protecting some that already exist, which I guess conservatives wouldn't understand.
You will find out soon. Yeah. As you become handmaidens.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, so it's something that I don't think it's like you have these role reversals. I'm assuming this is intentional, but like, I'm just not sure like how we've obviously. There have been a lot of people who have read into this as a feminist text, which I think is amazing. And also, I just want to add, I was thinking that I think that if you think about it, our ancestors, Homo sapiens, the men were also taking care of the children. Like, this idea that men don't take care of children is pretty new. And so men were also caregivers just as much as women, if not even more, because women can actually outrun men like long-term, long distance. So like,
really?
Yeah, I know. So,
It just goes to show you how much it's a gender construction.
Oh,
it's not anything natural.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of people have talked about like the colors that both Ellie and Grant wear. And like how they get like Ellie's shirt's kind of pink and then Grant's shirt's kind of blue. But at the end, they get quite muddy. And so it's like these sort of like gender constructs also get muddy in the process of it. There's so many layers.
Mm-hmm.
I do have one thing that I noticed that I couldn't quite wrap my head around from this viewing. And I wanted to ask you all what you thought about this. Mm. So they get on this like little ride thing, the scientist and the lawyer and Hammond.
Yeah.
And they get the whole like spiel, like, this is how we make dino DNA.
Yeah. And it's totally something straight out of Universal Park.
Oh yeah, like, totally.
Yeah. The bar that comes down in front of them, and this kind of stadium stacked seating.
Yes. No expense was spared. Oh my gosh. Such a capitalist. Anyway. so eventually it starts rotating, and then it shows the scientists in the labs, and they're, you know, doing their thing. And the lawyer is asking Hammond if that if the scientists are real or they animatronics. But the word that he actually used
is... Oh, he says autoerotics.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh? And...
I caught that too. I rolled it back. I was like, what did I just hear? Are they autoerotic? And he's like, animatronic.
I know, right? He's like, no, they're fully non-animatronic. You know, just like, okay, we're going to need to unpack that because... like normally in a movie like this one, that's it's like I think sometimes movies put in these little like flubs to make the dialogue feel more natural, which is how people talk, right? Like they're not, it's not always perfectly scripted. But this one seems like the editing for this movie must have been so lovingly done, like. And this is the thing that... So is this like a weird like adult joke or is this something more that we can read into?
I thought it was supposed to be... I thought it was supposed to be a bit of a joke about how uninformed the lawyer was.
Yeah, because he's a dork. Like he's showing up...
He's the dum-dum.
Yeah, like in this jungle environment wearing a double-breasted suit.
Uh-huh. With the shorts and... Yeah. I love that scene when he is, the opening scene where he's on that raft and he's being pulled in and it's just like, such a, I mean, goofball. so serious, you know. But autoerotic. And I was like, is this some sort of weird, like, and I'm just like, I'm an adult now and I still don't get it. So
that would it'd be interesting to ask the writers, like, what were you doing with this? was it to just illustrate that he was kind of goofy, you know, didn't get it, or that it was like, where'd you hear a word like that, lawyer?
Autoerotic, right? And like that just does not come up terribly often. And I will point out that there is this moment where Hammond, towards the beginning, when he is. Being quite presumptuous, he's coming into the kind of trailer of Grant and Ellie on their dig, and he pops open the champagne, and I was like, is this some sort of, like, ejaculation happening? Like, I don't know. I mean, he could be, in a way, like, it could be about stroking his ego, or, I don't know, I feel like there's... potentially something to read into, but I might be going too much into like a...
No, but you're right. It's like he's landing his helicopter on the site of their dig. So he's fucking up all of the work that they're doing with like little brushes. And then he's in their domestic space. He's never met them. He went into their fridge and got out liquor. It is very much like he's penetrated... their world in this really entitled way. But it's just because it's like, oh, what can I offer? Money, 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 money. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why, but I have this quote, something about how discovery is a violent, penetrative act.
Yeah.
Rape of the natural world. That's in the movie. I that must have been Jeff Goldblum saying that.
Yeah, that nobody was Malcolm's character.
Yeah. It's like, whoa. So, anyway, this movie got kind of kinky, and I liked it. I liked that, but I'm also perplexed. By this read as well. So
yeah. But it's funny how we consume so much media that I'm like, wait, where did that happen? Oh, that was in the movie, right?
I know. It's a lot to take in for sure.
Yeah, this is sort of a funny movie to watch now because so many of the lines in this film are like often repeated and iconic, and as soon as you hear them, it's like you've heard them a dozen times, you know.
Wait, Hyde, have you ever, like, are you now like, oh, that's what that is, like, now that you've seen the movie?
Well, I guess I'm not sure what Sarah's referring to.
Like the line, life finds a way, or like any of those. There's a lot of famous quotes from the movie.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, my all-time favorite, let's see if I can, okay, so it's when they're in the car. and they're on that little tour about to get, you know, kind of terrorized. Jeff Goldblum. I know his name is Malcolm, but I'm gonna call him Jeff.
We know who you're talking about.
He says, "God creates dinosaurs. God creates dinosaurs."
Are you doing impressions now?
Yes. God creates man. Man creates God. Man, shit, I fucked it up. Man destroys God. Man creates.
You can start over. You're in control of this.
All right. God creates dinosaurs. God creates man. Man destroys God. Man creates dinosaurs. And then Ellie comes in. She says, "Dinosaurs eat man. Women inherit the earth." And I was like, oh, snap.
Shit.
That was so good. I was like, yes. And I feel like there's so many little... I feel like feminism was like kind of a big thing in the 90s, mm-hmm. like girl power and Spice Girls. Mm-hmm. And Ellie had her moment when she was like...
The Spice Girls. Forget their contributions.
Really overselling Spice Girls, but okay.
But it was there. I mean, as a kid, like you kind of...
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And so, yeah. I mean... And Ellie has that moment when she is like, we'll talk about gender politics and survival environments later, whatever she says. Yes, and I'm just like, yeah, girl, like, you're capable.
You're on to it, though, because for a mainstream Hollywood movie, mm-hmm. there is a politic that would have been leftist.
Yeah.
Well, the sad thing is it looks, I think today it might look progressive, but... I think that's only because politics have been pushed so far to the right now. Yeah. You know, it's right. scary.
Ooh, can we say that? Can we take up for ourselves? Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Like, it's not even, I don't know. Yeah, it's sad to me, but that it looks so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. One thing I did notice about this movie, you were saying... Aaron, what did I notice that I didn't notice when I was young?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is true of, like, a lot of movies of the era, was, like, the fat phobia shit in this movie is out of control. And
it's bad.
Really is, like, hard for me to watch now. Like, all the stuff, all the, ridiculous stereotypes with Dennis' character are crazy. And, like, he's already, like, the villain, so the fact that they feel like they really have to, like, drive home how he's, like, a slob and, like, eating candy bars and, like, all this stupid stuff.
Butterfingers.
It's infuriating for me to watch.
Yeah, that's a hard, that did not age well, for sure.
I just want you guys to know that before we started recording this podcast, I made some brownies, but I didn't eat them. But I've been looking at them this entire time.
Hi, can I tell you something?
Hi.
Literally, James is making brownies right now, and the house smells like
them. Oh, no way!
So it's so funny.
Wow. All right, I kind of...
We are so synced up.
Shit, do I need to go get some mix or something?
I think you do.
I'm only getting brownies if they're laced with something, but I'll have to go get the Brian's.
Laced brownies.
Yes. So, yeah, so poor Dennis, because he's really, okay, here's the thing. Like, as a kid, you're like, oh, he's the villain. He's the one who's causing all the trouble. But there's an interesting interaction that he has with Hammond where he's like, Dennis, I'm not going to go into your financial problems. And it's just like, what are y'all talking about? Like, there's something there that obviously, maybe in the book, it goes into it much further. Uh-huh. But
well, he's selling the DNA to someone because somebody has gotten to him.
Here's the crazy thing, hon. First of all, obviously, he's not getting paid enough. We have to agree on that. Because if he was, he wouldn't be doing this. But...
Right.
They only have one tech person for the whole park, which is insane.
I know.
Well, actually, Samuel Jackson's character Arnold is a tech person also.
That's true. And we can count what's her name? The girl
Lex.
Child.
The grandchild.
Lex, goddamn, the grandchild. She's tech, but obviously she's not been hired. Well, maybe she should be, but...
contractor problems.
Yeah.
So there's that, but also, okay, like, imagine if we actually had this technology and one... Like, imagine Elon Musk is able to take DNA from extinct animals.
Oh, you think he doesn't have an island full of dinosaurs?
This is my actual nightmare.
Oh, God.
That's where they're having the next fire fest.
Oh, fuck no. God. Here's my thing. Like, okay, sure, it's neat to bring back dinosaurs, but can't we bring back animals that we caused their extinction? Like,
oh.
Couldn't that be a more
like
noble
the dodo
cause?
Bird.
Like the dodo. Like, the let's bring pigeon. Back the dodo bird. Like,
yeah.
Like Jeff Goldblum said, they had their time. Like, we can let them go. You know, we don't... And then we're all... The thing is, like, we... And here's the other part that's so funny about this movie now. It's like, now there's a lot more about what dinosaurs actually looked like. And there's this idea that, you know, they have feathers. Which I was like, yeah, put some feathers on those dinosaurs. Like, I could see that happening. But, the funny thing is I was listening to this other amazing podcast, 99% Invisible, and they have an episode about dinosaurs and how they're illustrated and what they did. Do you all know kind of about, am I talking, do you all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like I'm listening.
Yes.
So what they did, this was pretty neat, but they decided to sort of illustrate how little we know about the way that dinosaurs actually looked. So they gave the dinosaur illustrators bones of existing animals that we know of, like an elephant.
Oh.
Right. And they were like, okay, well, draw this the way that you would draw a dinosaur. And it just looks nothing like an elephant, right?
Oh, my God.
It's just so, like, it doesn't have its trunk.
I want to see this.
It's so interesting, Hyde. Like, it's just like, we have no idea what the fuck. Like, we have depicted them without, like, these, like, fatty, tissuous, muscly parts, you know? They're, dehydrated lizards, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, like, pre-photography, when they sent exploratory teams and they'd send an artist and they'd have sketchbooks. And, yeah, there'd be a drawing of something in the New World that you're like, wait, what? And also ethnographic studies and how I remember seeing some drawings of, like, what they thought human characters were in the New World. And some of them had, like, their faces on their torsos.
Oh, my God.
Like, they
no
didn't have
way.
A head.
Oh, my God.
I used to collect some of these images. And, it's like, you know, xenophobia, racism, et cetera, et cetera. Exoticism.
Yes. But I think it's also, like, really illustrative of how... It kind of, like, draws on that same theme of, like, we're not in control of even these ideas of what things look like. Like, we really are so in the dark, you know, but we think we know, right? We're going to make these movies, we're going to create these images, but, like, we really have no idea.
That's fascinating.
I think we can just be okay with that. We're like, we don't know what... And also, I would argue, I don't think we know what they sounded like either.
Right.
It's like, how do we know...
I really wanted to talk about the dinosaur sounds in this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
When Sam Elliott's in the tree going like... like calling them like, oh yeah.
So
we used to do this down on the farm.
Okay. So... Yeah, when I was rewatching this the other night, I was thinking about, Hyde, what do they call it? Like, the creation of those made-up sounds in movies? Is it called Foley?
Oh, Foley. Foley sound. Foley sounds. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I was wondering, how did they make some of these animal sounds? Because I know there's probably some trick to it.
Uh-huh.
And I looked up, and... a lot of the sounds are actually sort of like pre-existing sounds that pre-existing animals make that they've distorted.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So like the
so it's like a cow.
The T-Rex sound is a baby elephant sound. but it's like slowed down significantly.
What?
To have that weird distorted screech.
Oh, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of like the screechy cat, alley cats. You're like, where? And it's like, the fuck is going on out there? Yeah. But that's so true that sometimes amazing.
And some of the raptor sounds are actually recordings of tortoises having sex. allegedly.
Ooh, autoerotic. Yeah.
I know. You know what? I thought you were going to say, and this is totally where my mind went. I was like, when the sounds of like Republicans having sex.
Yeah, you mean dinosaurs having sex?
That checks
out.
Mitch McConnell, specifically.
It's Mitch McConnell. He kind of looks like a turtle, honestly. I mean.
Oh my god. Next time you're camping, you're going to hear something weird. You're just going to be like, oh my god, are Republicans having sex? Is that what that is? It's so scary.
And the raptor. The like snorting of the raptor. So if you think back, like the iconic kitchen scene,
scared
the living hell out of me as a child.
Oh yes. My god, me too. Yeah. I'm sweating thinking about it.
Uh-huh. When the raptor puts his face up to the little like circle window of the kitchen door and snorts. That's like just like your. I think it's like a run of the mill like horse snorting noise.
I was gonna say,
My
dog makes that sound when she's like wanting something. She'll snort, and I'm like, that's how animals sound. They little snort.
Yeah.
like if she wants up on the bed, it's like snort.
And all of these being lizards, reptiles. Like, I'm not familiar with reptile noises.
That's so true.
I'm familiar with mammal and bird noises.
Yeah. That's the funny thing. It's the same disconnect with, like, trying to imagine what dinosaurs looked like when you've never seen them.
Interesting. I just feel like it really humbles us as a species to, like, know our ignorance, you know? It's like...
You said something earlier about not knowing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I have respect for people who just say, like, I don't know. We don't know. Mm-hmm. I have so much fear of people that have answers for everything and think they know.
Here's the crazy part, Hyde. I thought as a child I knew who the monster was in this movie. And now I'm not so sure who the monster is. And it's just...
Wow.
It kind of, like... hits home a little bit, you know. It's like the more mature you get, the less it becomes so black and white.
Yeah.
And it becomes muddier, and it's just like, who is the villain of this? Is it the patriarchy? Yeah. Maybe. Usually.
Capitalism.
Capitalism. It's always capitalism.
God complex. Yeah. Oh god, I want to talk about one more pet peeve. Oh,
yes.
Please. So you're running for your life, you're running for your life, you're running for your life. Mm-hmm. You jump into the Jeep and, like, pause for a little, like, little funny quip. And it's like, get the fuck on the helicopter. Like, stop fucking around. That's what I'm talking to my TV.
I can't remember. I do remember that part before the helicopter where they...
Are you talking about Grant saying, that they had a lovely weekend or whatever on the way.
Oh my god. That is so that's the shit that I'm like, that's so quintessential 90s where they like, they're like a dry sarcasm, but like it's a little bit like forced, I think now. We're just like, all right, you know. Or my favorite, like, you know, the marketing towards children when a kid gets slimed and you're like, yep, that's the 90s.
Oh, totally. We all want to get slimed. Nickelodeon.
Yes, yeah. Like, bring it on. So, you know they're marketing this shit to kids. But, so good. It's a masterpiece.
It is a good film. I really enjoyed it.
That makes me so happy, Hyde. Like,
yeah.
I'm so glad you were to watch, like...
It took me 30 years to get over my snubbery of Hollywood films.
It's easy to... You know what? I don't see the blockbusters of today, so I understand. Like,
get it.
I'm not out
there. Oh, you're not going to go see the Marvel...
I have no idea what's coming out. I know... people watch them and people like them. But I remember, now it's like years ago, but it's like 4 or 5 years ago when some Marvel movie was coming out and everybody was like, oh my God, this is going to be like this amazing thing. And I was like, guys, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know who these people are, what they're doing. And I'm sure it's a good movie. It can't be Jurassic Park for sure. But yeah. I'm thankful that as children, we still had movies like this, right? Like well-crafted, well-edited, well-acted. And they had kids. Like, you just don't see too many action movies with, like, kids that just get to be kind of dorky. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I like it.
Where are they now?
Oh, man. You know what? I would imagine that Lex is some brilliant woman in STEM. You know, she's working alongside, you know,
well, we can find out.
Techies out there.
We do have Google.
And then Tim's probably, I don't know, he's probably had trauma, so let me think here. Or bless their hearts.
Research, you know, scientist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's probably... But you know what? I think Lex, to me, seems like the kiddo that's going to, like, be a star, you know?
Of course.
Oh, guess what? Yeah. The actor that played Lexi is a painter, a former actress, but
no
she's a
way.
Painter.
That's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey.
And she's 42 now.
Oh,
how's that?
Fucking God.
That's terrifying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, really quickly, before I forget, this came up. Sometimes I go on IMDb and I'm like, what kind of trivia? And of course, for this movie, it is like endless movie trivia, you know, because it's just like some of our movies have like two or three little factoids. Like this one has millions. But I was like scrolling. And I'm like, okay. But this caught my attention. So in the, I think it's like a cafeteria kind of area, right? Where you've got these sort of like dinosaur backdrops. Do you all remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then you see the shadow of the dinosaur.
Yes, yeah. One of those backdrops had a dinosaur-themed Guernica.
No.
In it.
Oh, what?
Yes.
What? I missed that.
Dude, I looked at it because I was like, the fuck? And there it was, Picasso's Guernica, slightly rearranged, obviously, with dinosaurs. But like, and I was like, how foreboding is that? Like, whose decision, what art history nerd was on set and was like, gee, I think there should be a Guernica set here.
There's always an art history nerd, let me tell you.
Oh my goodness.
I feel like I'm constantly noticing in film them, you know, composing a shot to look like a painting and all that.
Totally.
Oh, for sure.
Totally. Yeah, it's fascinating. But it's nice to know that art history is in our popular culture, even though it's a teeny tiny little scrap. We'll take it, but it's there. I'll post it on the Instagram so y'all can see, but you can't deny it. Like it is Guernica with the T-Rex. So
yeah.
Little nod to art history, little nod to that. So, cool.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. Well, you guys, we're at like an hour 15.
I know.
We could go longer.
We've just scratched the surface with their little like scratchy claw, you know, a little dino.
Little
you know,
raptor.
Oh, God.
Raptor.
Yeah, Sam Elliott.
I love that when he like throws it. He's like, I don't need this anymore. Yeah. Like dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you should
I've been dodging these claws.
When he renounces his old self.
Yes, he's shedding his former patriarchal duties and he's embracing
we'll
the future. Ugh,
we'll
I love
see.
This movie so much. Sarah, thank you so much for wanting to talk about this because honestly, I have been itching to talk about Jurassic Park.
Like Erin said that like when she had the idea for the podcast that this was a film she really wanted to talk about.
I thought you were
you
joking,
that?
Aaron.
I'm not. But honestly, like, I mean, there are a lot of movies that I personally have been inspired by as an artist. So, like, there, I mean, this isn't necessarily one of them, but, like, as a feminist, it's been an interesting one to revisit because, like, sometimes I think about the movies and the media that we consume as children and how that has affected our psyche. Mm. And I just can't help but think that I had, like, absorbed this in some capacity, you know, as
you
a child.
You have.
I think so. You know what? When my parents are like, why didn't you have children? And I'm like, well, you let me watch Jurassic Park. So, like, what do you... I just don't have an answer for that besides Jurassic Park. So,
yeah. You know what's funny? I didn't really touch on it, but if people do go to look at my work, I think they'll see the aesthetic connection right away.
Yes, totally.
It ingrained in me pretty deep, I think, like, you know, mm-hmm. color palette and all, so.
Yes.
Yeah. And Sarah, what have you got coming up?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I don't have any exhibitions on the forefront, but... my partner, James, and I are going to be going to Bemis in Omaha, Nebraska in the fall.
Oh,
that's
awesome.
Right. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, really excited.
Very prestigious and very competitive.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a residency we were supposed to do in 2020, and we had the option of delaying it. But because they schedule so far out, it got delayed until 2022. So we're just finally now going to do it.
Will you be there all summer or what?
Just for a couple months in the fall.
Nice.
Okay.
And what are you planning on working on out there? Is it like a zine or is it more like an installation or reading room?
I think we're going to be working on a couple things. Actually, totally different things. They have a ceramic facility, so I think I actually will be doing a lot of ceramic stuff.
Oh, and James, that's cool. Curious to see that.
James has been teaching himself how to do some computer programming stuff, so we've been speculating about doing sort of a I'm gonna say like video game, but that's like.
Yeah.
That's too ambitious. It's just going to be sort of like a narrative, simple, very simple, maybe like online game experience
Sarah,
thing.
Okay.
You must spare no expense here.
Yes.
Okay? You know what? I feel like that should be a catchphrase that should be used more. Like when I'm at the Aldi grocery store, I'm sparing no expense.
Right.
Okay, that's happening for sure. Sarah, thank you again for being on this podcast.
Of
this
course.
Was such a delight. I just
thank you for having me.
Yes. And good luck with your residency in Bemis. That is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I don't know who I think I might know who our future guest is, but I'm not sure.
You know what? Huh. Let's just make it a secret.
Let's make it
a secret. Because I think we have a guest.
Yes.
But I think that they have not chosen the film yet, but
I
sent
know.
A list.
Yeah.
So you know.
We'll keep
just
it.
Just be patient.
Open. Yeah.
We're
working
our
on
hordes
it.
Of fans. Both of you. Just, yes. You know, cool it.
Stop pestering us, okay?
you'll know when you know.
And I guarantee it's going to be amazing. So
yeah.
Knowing the list that we are looking at, I'm excited. Because I haven't seen any of those movies, so I know I'm in for a treat.
Yeah.
But, alrighty.
Sarah Welsh.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love you.
Bye, Sarah.
I hope to see you sometime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Of course.
All right. Bye everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.